I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:37 PM on Monday, March 29th, 2021. And present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Lebon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks could please mute their cell phones. And today we're going to hear a presentation on tourism and the economy by Sarah Leonard, President and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And then after the presentation, we're going to hear HB 128, Use of Internet for Charitable Gaming, as well as HB 27, Naming of the Irene Webber Bridge. So with that, Ms. Leonard, if you could, thanks for joining us, and if you could put yourself on the record.
Hi, this is Sarah Leonard. I'm President and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
And I can go ahead and get started if that's okay with the chairs.
Yes, please do. Thanks.
So thank you for inviting comments from the Alaska Travel Industry Association today. I just want to note many images included in my slide deck are pre-COVID. They're mixed with pre-COVID and after COVID. Next slide. So as I mentioned, my name is Sarah Leonard. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And ATIA is the leading statewide organization for travel-related businesses and partners. ATI's mission is to promote Alaska as a top visitor destination and as one of the state's economic contributors. Our association has more than 600 members and community partners representing small and large businesses from every region in Alaska, as well as diverse sectors across the travel industry. We are led by a 24-member elected board of directors, again representing Alaska's regions and different business types. And Alaska's Lieutenant Governor is an ex officio member of our board of directors. Next slide, please. Along with being a statewide voice for Alaska tourism, ATIA has long managed the state's destination marketing program, Travel Alaska. Next slide. The marketing program traditionally includes producing a printed vacation planner, which is a magazine-style piece, public relations with media, television advertising when we can afford it, next slide please, and digital advertising through our main consumer website, travelalaska.com, along with social media through platforms like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. And we have had past investment in travel trade shows and international marketing efforts. Next slide please. I'll turn now to impacts of COVID-19 on our industry, and needless to say, the travel industry overall has been hit hard by the pandemic. According to the World Tourism Organization, destinations welcomed 900 million fewer international tourists between January and October when compared with the same period of 2019. This translated into a loss of $935 billion in export revenues from international tourism, more than 10 times the loss in 2009 during that global economic crisis. Next slide, please. International arrivals fell by 72% over the first 10 months of 2020. Travel restrictions, then low consumer confidence, and the global struggle to manage the disease generated this quote from the World Tourism Organization as the worst year on record in the history of tourism. Next slide, please. According to the U.S. Travel Association, in 2019, domestic and international travelers spent $1.1 trillion in the U.S. This spending directly supported 9 million jobs, that's 7% of the total private industry employment in the U.S., and generated $277 billion in payroll income and $180 billion in tax revenues for federal, state, and local governments. Since the beginning of March 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in over $500 billion in cumulative losses for the U.S. travel economy. At our current pace, the industry is not expected to fully recover until 2025. Next slide, please. So in Alaska, pre-pandemic, we saw close to 60% of our visitors arrive by cruise in the summer months, and over one-third by air, with the rest arriving by the Alaska-Canadian Highway, by land, or via the Alaska Marine Highway. These more than 2.5 million visitors in 2019 generated $4.5 billion in economic activity for the state and supported over 50,000 direct and indirect jobs. That's 1 in 10 Alaska jobs. Tourism in Alaska has generated $215 million in tax revenues for state and local governments. Since March of last year, every entry point to Alaska by travelers has been impacted. 99.9% of cruise sailings were canceled in Alaska. Air travel has been significantly impacted, although we did see some travel at airports last year as Alaska's testing procedures and travel mandates and guidelines were first initiated. With the Canadian border closures since March of 2020 and now extended through February 2022, large ship cruise and highway travel continues to be impacted. Next slide, please. Turning to air travel, this table represents all air travelers and the difference from 2019 to 2020. Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau saw 59% decreases across the board. Next slide, please. More dramatic differences in land crossings at the border with almost 250,000 less travelers. Next slide, please. And even more losses on the Alaska Marine Highway. Next slide, please. When we talk about how hard hit the Alaska visitor industry is from COVID-19, we currently look to employment data as we haven't been able to fund and gather more specific information until recently. And I'll just mention ATI is just about to implement a study in partnership with the McKinley Research Group to assess more comprehensive economic impacts from COVID-19 on the Alaska travel and tourism industry. But this graph represents data from the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development and is a snapshot of 1 month, June, year over year. It reflects various census areas from Skagway to Denali. Overall, Alaska was down 37% in employment in the leisure and hospitality industry. Next slide, please. And we see similar job losses in related air transportation and air transportation employment. Next slide, please. Overall, Alaska was down 35% in the accommodation and food service employment sectors, and the Denali Borough and Skagway community were significantly impacted by the loss of visitation this past summer. 87% and 80% employment losses in those communities. Next slide, please. Again, communities in the Denali Borough and in Southeast Alaska were particularly impacted by the loss of large ship cruise travel. However, the impacts are spread throughout the state. Next slide, please. And in just a snapshot in June, again, of one tourism sector, sightseeing tourism businesses were down 85% in employment losses in Anchorage, Juneau, and Ketchikan. Next slide, please. The Alaskanomics blog from March 26 this year, so just recently, just reported February employment was down 7% still from February 2020, a loss of over 22,000 jobs, with leisure and hospitality continuing to record the largest losses, with 7,300 fewer jobs than the prior February, and that's a over 20% loss. These devastating losses translate into people's jobs. These are our friends, our neighbors, our colleagues. From our frontline customer service teams to our outdoor tour guides, these are people's livelihoods. Next slide, please. Since the beginning of the pandemic, ATI has employed a multi-pronged approach toward moving and keeping Alaska's tourism industry onto the economic path toward recovery. First, the health and safety of our teams and visitors remains a priority. ATI developed high-level industry safety protocols in April of 2020 that businesses can incorporate into their operations and market to travelers now. Secondly, ATI continually advocates for safe return for cruises in Alaska. Canada's continuation of prohibiting cruise vessels until February 2022 has further threatened our already fragile tourism industry. ATI has worked closely with our congressional delegation on brainstorming solutions to safely resume cruising operations, and we appreciate their leadership on this issue, especially relating to the conversations with the CDC, along with possible changes to complicated federal regulations, such as the temporary waiver to the Passenger Vessel Services Act. We are closely watching any updated timelines and information from the CDC and related to their framework and further guidance for the conditional sailing order. And I'd like to acknowledge, too, the Alaska Legislature's House Joint Resolution 13 urging the United States Congress to exempt cruise ships from certain provisions of the PVSA related to the Canadian ports, and appreciate the legislature's and the House support on that issue. Finally, there was another 30-day extension by the Canadian government to keep the land border closed through April 21st of this year. Canadian land border restrictions continue to be confusing by province, and yet another entryway stalled for travelers to reach Alaska destinations. Next slide, please. ATIA has also partnered with the Department of Health and Social Services on travel guidelines during COVID. We support the governor to be able to have the tools available in a public health emergency. At the same time, our industry is moving forward and letting visitors know we are ready to safely provide Alaska experiences now. Vaccine availability has really changed the conversation for travel, in that Alaska is perceived as an even more safe destination and one that is open for business. Because Alaska is making available the vaccine to anyone 16 years or older, and this applies to residents and non-residents working in the travel and tourism industry, we are encouraging businesses to make the vaccine available within their workforce so that our teams can be safe and can work in Alaska. Next slide, please. ATI advocates for continued financial support for tourism businesses and destination marketing organizations at the local, state, and federal levels. This includes complementing the U.S. Travel Association's relief and recovery priorities, which focus on considerations for the tourism industry and is reflected in the recently passed American Rescue Plan Act. Important provisions in this act include flexibility and extensions within the Paycheck Protection Program, grants to tourism businesses and nonprofits through dollars allocated to states, local, and tribal governments, including aid to impacted industries such as tourism, travel, and hospitality. This also includes the valid use of tourism marketing and promotion for communities and states that have suffered economic injury due to losses in travel, tourism, or outdoor recreation through programs like the funding that will be coming to Alaska and through the Economic Development Administration, or EDA. Next slide, please. We know the future of Alaska's tourism industry and our long-term recovery is about investing in the marketplace. Alaska is competing right now with other destinations for every single traveler and every single dollar this year and next. As the manager and steward of Alaska's destination marketing program, ATI has shifted our message to target the independent and air traveler now as accessible ways to safely travel to Alaska. We know promoting Alaska now and into the summer, fall, and winter seasons can help generate much needed economic activity for tourism businesses and communities. Next slide, please. And I just want to speak a little bit about what we're seeing as far as traveler sentiment. We are seeing increasing positive trends related to traveler sentiment. Destination Analysts, a national research consulting firm, is predicting, amidst the stress that we're all living in this pandemic environment, that Americans are prioritizing relaxation and many are ready to travel to achieve it. Other trends that we are hearing, nearly 9 in 10 travelers agree that having a trip planned gives them something to look forward to, and that planning travel makes them excited, happy, hopeful. A record high 74% of American travelers did some sort of travel planning and dreaming in the recent past weeks alone. And close to 9 in 10, that's 87% of American travelers, now have travel plans in the next 6 months. That's the highest level we've seen since March of 2020. Next slide, please. Vaccine availability will play a huge role in travel's recovery, and we remain optimistic the rollout will expand to reach more arms in the coming months. Again, destination analysts and U.S. Travel shared these takeaways that over half of Americans say they expect to get a vaccine by this June. Older Americans, which tend to be part of Alaska's target demographic for travelers, are more likely to get vaccinated or already have their two doses. And younger travelers, while maybe farther away from a vaccination, are the likeliest to plan for travel as vaccines become even more widely available. Following the May 1st goal to open vaccine eligibility to all U.S. adults, 60% of travelers are confident we will, in quotes, return to normal by summer. Next slide, please. And actually, can I ask you to go to the next slide? I'll come back to this slide in just a minute. Today, we need to be able to reach travelers with the necessary information on how to travel safely and visit Alaska. So ATI produced in partnership a video invitation with Governor Dunleavy to invite travelers to Alaska this summer. And we are sharing travel safe information in our messaging right now on pretty limited budget. Next slide. We continue to reach travelers through our current marketing channels, digital assets via social media, advertising, and public relations. Next slide, please. And we're also renewing our Show Up for Alaska campaign, encouraging residents to get out and explore places in their own backyard this summer and fall and winter. And now if you could go back to that slide with the circle, I think it was slide 25. Thank you. The circle of economic life for Alaska travel and tourism means more now than ever before. Destination marketing will help Alaska travel and tourism toward recovery. The return on investment with destination marketing really stands out when you don't have it anymore. Pre-pandemic, Alaska's visitor industry provided over $4 billion in economic activity, and we supported 1 in 10 jobs in Alaska. When visitors spend money in your destination, they contribute to local and state budgets. Alaska needs to be marketing to travelers now as they are making their travel decisions so we can recover those jobs and continue to generate economic benefits for Alaska communities and the state. And then if you can go back to the very last slide, I'll say thank you. Thank you for your support of Alaska's tourism industry. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leonard. We've got a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Leonard, has your board taken a position on the emergency declaration debate?
Thank you, Representative. And through the chair, the ATI Board of Directors has not taken a formal position on the emergency declaration order. They did have a discussion that we do support the governor being able to have the tools necessary in a toolbox that he needs in a public health emergency.
Representative LeBron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Leonard, for your presentation. I guess I had a couple questions, and earlier in your presentation, you mentioned highway traffic coming up from Canada. And as of April, there's still no change in that status. If I heard that correctly, do you have a crystal ball to see when highway traffic may be reopened coming up through Canada?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chair. I wish I had a crystal ball. It's one of the areas we've advocated for to that we could provide a safe travel bubble. We think it's a more travelers are looking at being in their own vehicles as a, for lack of a better word, an easier way to be safe, to travel up through Alaska. And it's really, what I've heard anecdotally, dependent on each province, and the Canadian government officials are being pretty conservative about opening up non-essential travel over land, and that is correct. My understanding is there was another 30-day extension through April.
Thank you. If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. You mentioned destination marketing and state support for destination marketing. How much money is raised through your association members to promote Alaska as a destination?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chair. It really depends on the state investment that ATI has historically partnered with the state, where we're able to raise cooperative marketing opportunity sales from industry to leverage that state investment. So in some years, we've raised $1 million from industry to leverage a state public-private investment or grant. Other times, we've been able to raise closer to $2 million. Overall, our association does receive revenue from our membership dues and convention in normal years. This past year, we really didn't make any net revenue on our convention for obvious reasons. But you don't have to be an ATI member to participate in our cooperative marketing programs that we're able to offer at different levels, again, depending on our marketing program budget.
And one last question, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the cruise industry and visiting Alaska in 2021, is there still some window that might be open for the cruise industry to return to Alaska this year? Or effectively, I guess I'm talking about the larger cruise ships, over 100 passengers. Is that market pretty much too late for 2021?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chair. You know, I'm not a cruise ship executive, but I will say I think the window is closing rapidly on that, on having any large ship cruise travel this summer.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Leonard, for your presentation. I guess kind of speaking to the cruise ships again, I'm not sure how many of your members are the smaller businesses that service some of the tours for the cruise ship companies, obviously, with Alaskans. So I guess my question is if you could speak a little bit to the relationship between the cruise ship companies and the smaller businesses, if you do have members who offer different expeditions and stuff on land, and if you do have members, do you know what role the state could play in helping them as we're facing another season without the cruise tourism sector? So it seems like it would be very difficult to keep doors open if you're a small company that relies on those passengers coming in.
Thank you, Representative, and through the chairs. Yes, the majority of ATI's membership are really small to medium-sized tourism businesses overall, with 3 to 5 employees or 7 to 20 employees for medium-sized businesses. And we do have membership from those smaller business operators in Southeast Alaska and in the interior, really throughout the state. And I completely agree with you. I think the state can really step in again and help provide that needed cash and liquidity for some businesses that might not see or might see really low or no revenue for another summer this season. And the state could again step in with grants, a grant program like last year to provide that those gap resources for businesses to be able to get through this next tough summer season.
Follow-up?
Thank you. I guess not as much a follow-up, but my other question is, right now we're struggling, obviously, with limited general fund dollars. Do you think that tourists in general would support slightly higher fees for park use to help kind of offset some of the I guess gap that we have in the budget? I don't know how our state compares completely to other states, but I feel like a lot of people go on vacation recognizing that you're going to spend a little bit of money. And I know, you know, when we went to the Florida theme parks recently, We probably paid $25 or $30 a day just to park in the parking lot. So for us, people are coming to Alaska to, you know, participate in the nature and those things that Alaska offers. And I'm just curious if you think that that would be detrimental to people coming up, or if a slight increase could likely be supported.
Thank you, Representative, and through the chairs. You know, not having really more information on what a fee increase would be or how it would be implemented, I don't know if I can answer that directly. I think that for our visitors, when fees are imposed unexpectedly, that's where we hear frustration from visitors. It does take some time in planning to plan your trip to Alaska because we are considered a long-haul destination. And so I don't know if I can speak directly to that, how visitors would perceive that. I think, again, when fees are increased unexpectedly, we usually we hear some frustration from potential visitors. And I think I'll just add to that, like right now, we're doing everything we can to make it as easy as possible for visitors to come to Alaska and providing that necessary information because of the loss potentially of a large ship cruise season and the volume of visitors we normally expect. There are going to be many businesses looking to gain any kind of economic activity this summer, fall, and winter season.
Maybe we can connect and chat a little bit more about how we can market it, but I do want to state on the record it wouldn't be major. I mean, we're not talking about making it like $100 to go to a parking lot and go hike Flat Top, so we'll chat offline, and I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson and then Wool.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is on the topic of taking a really large basket of lemons and trying to make a tiny bit of lemonade. We have obviously a huge downturn in our tourism dollars due to the cruise ships and the Alcan closure, but we also have a marine highway system that does not have the ridership. In fact, the ridership went down significantly during this last year. I guess I was wondering if you could see a way of, you talked about shifting your focus sort of marketing somewhat, and I know that we're not talking about the same scale at all, but how could we use that somehow to get the ridership up on our ferries, and do you think that's even possible or a reasonable question? Thank you, Madam Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative, and through the chairs. That's exactly why we have shifted, because we know people can get here by air travel and do independent travel this summer season and into the fall right now. And so we have shifted our messaging and our information to highlight experiences like the Alaska Marine Highway. That's through our social media posts and through messaging, through the video I mentioned, and targeting destinations in the lower 48 that where we normally see visitation. So again, I agree with you, not at the volume that we would see in normal years, and it certainly can't replace the large ship cruise visitor volume, but we're doing everything we can to share that story, like on an Alaska Marine Highway experience, so that we can hopefully increase ridership with the ferry as well as with other independent related type of experiences in Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just seems to me like for those people that, you know, maybe are a little bit more adventurous, may not even know that the ferry exists out there, and there might be just a little bit of opportunity. It would be wonderful if it somehow worked out and was able to work it out. Like I said, get a little bit of a positive somewhere out of this. Anyway, thank you.
I just want to recognize that we've been joined by Representative Kronk in the audience. Thanks for joining us. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Representative Johnson just brought up an interesting concept about ferry travel. I hadn't really thought of, because a ferry coming from the Seattle area to Alaska, I guess, is exempt from the passenger strip ship restriction. So you could bring up hundreds and hundreds of people that way. I think you might want to get a bar going on that one, though. I know they don't serve alcohol on the ferry, and if I was on a six-day trip up here, I might want to fix that problem. But that really wasn't my question. You said the window's closing on big ship cruise travel this year, and who knows, hopefully we can wedge it open for part of the summer, but it's obviously not closed for other travel, air travel you mentioned. I know there's new airlines coming up here that didn't used to come up here. Are your members that maybe in the past were not so interested in adding more marketing since they relied on the ancillary businesses of cruise ships? Like, if I had a float plane business in Juneau that was right next to the cruise ship dock, I had a built-in audience coming in every ship, so I may not be interested in marketing in Seattle or other states around the country to try to get people to come up here. Do you see an increase in that interest now that the cruise ships may be on hiatus for a while of trying to market to other areas, and maybe now's the time to do it? And I know I've heard from other legislators that due to the economic crisis that we're experiencing, we shouldn't really spend any money on anything because we can't justify any expense because of this crisis we're in. But one could argue that promoting Alaska to the outside world right now at this crucial time might pay back many times over. So are any of your members having that discussion and maybe reevaluating the need for exterior marketing above and beyond their capabilities, and maybe even increasing their contribution where in the past they might have been reluctant?
Thank you, Representative, through the chairs. I will say that along with ATIA, we have had discussions within our membership of people shifting gears, you know, the cliche word pivoting in order to make something work. But I will also say that for many businesses that are having to think about how to get revenue this summer might not have those extra resources to put into marketing. It's one of the reasons that they do partner with ATIA or rely on a statewide marketing effort to help with our limited dollars gain that reach and at that scale into other domestic destinations right now or domestic markets. But I do hear that conversation among our membership and among our industry to find any way to adapt and either try to generate some economic revenue and stay open, or some businesses have decided just to close, quite frankly, and try to hang on another summer season.
Thank you. I guess, I in follow-up, if I may, I guess, I feel for all these businesses, and I know in the past, my understanding is the cruise ship industry within ATIA feels like they do a lot of their own marketing and therefore doesn't need the ATIA marketing, and I know that's been somewhat of an issue, and they're hurting right now, so they can't be relied on to, increase their marketing to come up to Alaska, especially if they can't even come up here. So, I guess, and I know the amount of state contribution towards marketing has declined drastically, and maybe as a state that should be reevaluated. And I know when times are tough, you don't want to spend money, but maybe when times are tough, you do need to spend a little money and maybe try to fill some of these gaps. And I certainly hope we can get the cruise ships coming back, and maybe this resolution will have that effect if it passes, but thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Leonard, for your presentation today. To the topic of federal relief efforts that have come through both last year and, are yet to come to fruition yet this year, but have your members reported difficulties in accessing some of those resources that have been made available, and is there anything that you'd like to pass on in terms of how the state might do a better job of making what resources there are available more accessible?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chairs. I think through this past year, there were a lot of challenges for businesses accessing federal programs, federal stimulus programs. A lot of small business owners, as many of you probably know, your constituents might not have an accounting or financial person on staff to navigate through some pretty sometimes complex applications. And I think the Department of Commerce last year really stepped in and helped facilitate a more smooth process with the state coronavirus grant programs to small businesses. I would say take from that program, that's one feedback from ATIA and from membership I've heard, is build on that successful program to be able to get out grants, not loans, grants to small businesses and organizations as seamless and quickly as possible, recognizing, you know, valid reporting and accountability guidelines. But I think that would be a huge help from the state. And then also to recognize that the wording in this new American Rescue Plan Act does highlight or give consideration to the travel and tourism industry and businesses and organizations in hospitality, where in previous stimulus funds, that our sector wasn't highlighted. It was for all businesses, which certainly we support all businesses being able to survive, but special consideration for the travel and tourism industry and creating relief programs for our sector businesses as arguably being one of the hardest hit industries in this pandemic.
Okay, do we have any further questions? Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Leonard, I know that in the good old days, a decade ago, your agency received somewhere in the range of $19 million, or the industry did collectively. I think that was the high watermark for contributions from the state. If that sort of generosity came again through the American Rescue Plan, is it usable as late as late May? Is it spendable, or have you missed the season?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chair. Yes, it's definitely spendable. At my time at ATIA, I remember grants at the level of $16 million and then leveraged by industry. But we could definitely be fluid and employ that investment to help market Alaska. It's definitely usable.
Do we have any further, Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Leonard, you're speaking about $16 million here a few years ago is what the state would put into marketing. And if I remember right, at that time, we compared that to Hawaii, who was putting $50 million into marketing for a destination. And is that still that much of a variance between the two states, or is it even bigger because we're putting $1 million in?
Thank you, Representative, and through the chair. I don't know if it's the exact number right now, what you're, how you've described it, but I will say with my discussions with other state tourism director colleagues, as recently as 2020, there were Western states in 2020 spending $15, $17 million on destination marketing. To try to generate and be open for business. Obviously, Alaska had a different environment and had necessary health and safety guidelines in place, but now we're ready and we'll be competing. There are destinations with our lower 48 neighbors that are already marketing and opening up for business and competing for those travelers.
Okay, any further questions? Seeing no questions, I want to thank you very much, Ms. Leonard, for your presentation, answering our questions. And with that, we are going to move on to the next two bills, so I will take in at ease to pass the gavel. Brief at ease.
I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee back to order. We're continuing this afternoon's meeting with amendments to House Bill 128, Use of Internet for Charitable Gaming. Members will find two amendments for consideration, and we will consider them in the order they were received. Online, we have Claire Radford from Legal Services, Colleen Glover, Tax Director for the Department of Revenue, and Connor Bell, Legislative Fiscal Analyst, for any questions. Amendment number one by Representative Rasmussen. Is there a motion?
Madam Co-Chair, I move amendment number one.
Jack, for purposes of discussion.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Last week in committee, there were a few issues that were brought up by members during our discussion on House Bill 128. After working with the sponsor and Ledge Legal, we believe this amendment addresses most, if not all, of the issues raised. This amendment eliminates the requirement for a purchaser to be a resident of the state of Alaska. It eliminates the requirement that the raffle licensee verify the age and location of the purchaser. It eliminates the prohibition of sales to people located outside of state if the organization wishes to open it up for outside sales. For internet sales, the purchaser, not the licensee, will verify their age and that the individual resides in a state where purchase of a raffle ticket is not prohibited. It clarifies that any raffle covered in this bill occurs in the state and the winner is determined in the state. It also includes an immediate effective date.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Fields, would you like to comment on the amendment?
Thanks. Zach Fields, House District 20. I support the amendment and appreciate the opportunity to work with Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Wohl, do you maintain your objection?
I do not.
With that, hearing no objection, the amendment has been adopted. Amendment number two by Representative LeBon. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number two.
Object for purpose of discussion.
Madam Chair, if you'd indulge me before I speak to amendment number two, I move amendment one to amendment two, and once that is adopted, I'd like to speak to amendment two as amended.
Do I have an objection?
Object for discussion.
Thank you. Representative LeBon.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I preface my remarks by saying that I intend to withdraw this amendment, but before I do, I want to get a few things on the record. Amendment 2, as amended, clarifies the language when it comes to how a permittee, an operator, or the holder of a multiple beneficiary permit may conduct a charitable raffle or lottery, a dog mushers contest, derby, or classic. The new language on page 3, line 8, would read as follows. A permittee, an operator, or the holder of a multiple beneficiary permit conducting a raffle or lottery, dog mushers contest, derby, or type of classic defined in Alaska Statute 05.15.690 may draw winning tickets online or by other electronic or digital means. The language would expressly allow, in addition to permittees, operators, and holders of multi-beneficiary permits, to draw winning tickets online or utilizing electronic or digital means on a computer. Utilization of electronic tools for drawing of winning tickets brings increased efficiencies, such as those noted by stakeholders during invited testimony. The department has interpreted the definition of, and I quote, raffle and lottery in Alaska Statute 05.15.690, Section 41, very strictly, such that drawing winning tickets by lot only means drawing physical tickets in a barrel draw. My desire is to make clear to the department that we intend to allow drawings to be conducted electronically. This amendment came to me from the suggestion of a letter from the Public Employees Local 71, which utilizes a charitable gaming operator, who also happens to be one of my constituents, to help fund a scholarship and wellness fund for members and their families. As the bill is written now, only permittees, not operators or holders of multi-beneficiary permits, may draw tickets online. Many nonprofits rely on operators to raise funds for them, reducing the effort of organizing massive fundraising events themselves. It is not my intent with this language to enable electronic poll tabs or electronic bingo, which I believe is only made more explicit by the amendment to the amendment specifying this would only apply to a raffle or lottery, dog mushers contest, derby, or classic. I believe the drafter, Claire Radford, is on the line. I believe can clarify some of these points, and I would also like to get an assessment by the Department of Revenue. Before we go to the drafter, there has been concern expressed by some stakeholders who are not comfortable with the amount of time that they have had to review this amendment. I have communicated with the sponsor, who has assured my office that they are willing to work with me on this amendment on the House floor. So in good faith, I intend to withdraw it so it can be offered on the floor once those groups have had a chance to get further review. So with that, Madam Chair, I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative LeBond. Amendment number two
is withdrawn.
Thank you. With that, we have finished amendments for House Bill 128. The bill itself is before the committee. Is there any discussion? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions that came up in discussion, basically around these amendments that have been withdrawn, but the questions still remain. I hope that maybe someone online can answer these questions. But if you're doing online raffle ticket sales or lottery ticket sales, combining them with paper, how do you marry them together and then draw a winning ticket? Do the online ones get converted to paper? And I guess the idea of drawing it electronically or digitally is now, for temporarily at least, off the table. Who knows what will happen on the House floor? Crazy things happen down there. So, I think now is almost a better place to air this out. But how do you marry the paper and the digital together? And then how do you draw a winner? And what if you want to go to the banquet and have, you know, little Cindy Lou Who come up and pull a ticket out? But do you take all the digital ones and write a number on them and stick it in? And also, if you're expanding this to large audiences out of state, and so Grandma in Fort Lauderdale can buy one, et cetera, is it made clear before the lottery even starts as to exactly how many tickets are going to be sold, and that you can't then, oh my God, sales are booming, we got to add another 500, that you don't just digitally keep adding tickets so that the initial purchasers know what the odds are, especially if it's a prize raffle as opposed to a classic?
Representative Fields.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I think the statute is pretty clear that whether you only sell the raffle tickets in person or do a combination of in-person and online. The drawing has to be fair and transparent, and there has to be a record of the tickets. So in one way or another, the operator of the raffle would have to consolidate those. I think we heard from the invited testimony that the permittees, the charitable organizations, believe that the online sales are actually more easily traceable, and they can have a trail of who bought a ticket and has a ticket in what traditionally has been a barrel. My understanding of the bill and how the bill was written is that it's actually already permissible under HB 128 to draw a ticket from a barrel in an online manner. Before adopting this amendment, I'm happy to work with the member from Fairbanks to clarify that, just to make sure there's no ambiguity. In terms of more legal detail than that, I would probably defer to Ledge Legal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Fields. I understand that you can pull, if I may follow up, I understand that you may pull a digital ticket from a digital barrel, but if you sold 500 tickets at the supermarket that month and those people have a paper stub, do you then digitally, I mean, these are just procedural questions that I'm kind of curious about. Do you digitally enter those into your digital barrel? And then again, sometimes you do want the ceremonial draw, and not always, but right. You know, instead of a random number generator.
Through the chair, my reading of the statute is pretty clear. If you sold 250 tickets online, 250 tickets in person, and you had an in-person drawing, there would need to be 500 tickets in the barrel, and you would have to have an equal chance of each of those tickets being drawn.
Thank you. Let's
follow up.
And as far as the number of tickets being sold, especially if you're going out of state, and the number could grow by large amount, you'd still, whatever the law is, you still have to come up with a set number of tickets sort of at the beginning of a raffle process. Is that correct?
I'm going to defer to Ledge Legal on setting parameters for numbers of tickets sold.
Ms. Radford? Ms. Radford, are you available?
Yes, I am. Through the chair, this is Claire Radford with Legislative Legal Services. I can look into the parameters limiting the amount of raffle tickets. I have this time, but I can get back to committee on that.
Oh, boy.
That's clear as mud. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the answer.
Mm. Ms. Radford, we're having a hard time hearing you. Can you restate, please?
Yes, through the chair. I can look into on the number of draft tickets committee on this question.
Thank you. Ms. Glover, do you have comments?
Committee, Colleen Glover for the record. I'm looking at the regulation right now. I know there is provisions that the tickets have to be sequentially numbered. So I do think if this legislation passes, there will be regulations that need to be modified. I'm not seeing offhand about the numbers changing or not, but I can get back to you.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Glover, maybe you don't know the answer right now, but I don't know who your charitable gaming person is, if they're online or not. But I guess I just want to know that if you do a raffle, wherever, whatever it is and wherever the tickets are being sold, that there's a finite number of tickets being sold going into it, so that if, you know, you're selling out of state and, you know, everyone at the living center where grandma is doesn't suddenly, you know, overwhelm the system and buy 10,000 tickets. So I just want to know that in regulation there's a finite number of tickets for a raffle that is already in regulation.
Ms. Glover?
Rep. Wool, through the chair. I am actually not seeing that in regulation, but like I said, I will follow up. Our charitable gaming manager is not online today, unfortunately, because of the state holiday.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and I guess I would just like to state that it doesn't seem appropriate for us to micromanage how operators choose to manage their raffles if they're operating within the legal bounds of what we have established. I've purchased quite a few raffles, I feel like, and it always seems to have a disclosure of the number of raffle tickets, the time and date of when the drawing will be held. And I think, if anything, adding the digital component to it eliminates some of the data entry and administrative work and provides for probably more accurate online records. Paper can get lost a lot easier than digital footprints, in my opinion. So I think it just adds to the transparency level and gives more flexibility to those that are operating these raffles.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative Laban.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, the language in this amendment attempted to broaden the scope to include operators and multi-beneficiary permittee holders. Would this amendment enable electronic bingo, electronic pull tabs, or electronic slot machines or other Class 3 gaming?
Through the chair, this is on your amendment. Through the chair, that was the concern we heard from some stakeholders, is that it could be misconstrued. I know that's not your intention, but I think I wanted to be 100% sure that the plain language would only be interpreted one way, which is consistent with our intent.
Yes, if I could follow up with a second question. Would allowing a winning ticket to be drawn by electronic or digital means create a conflict with the definition of raffle and lottery by the drawing for prizes by lot and as is defined in state statute?
Right. Through the chair, at the risk of getting way down into the weeds, there's a bit here that does hinge on the definition of by lot and whether that is limited to a drawing from a barrel in physical or electronic means. And I think what we need to make sure of is that we are narrowly referring to drawing from a barrel, such as it were, and not permitting online pull tabs, online slots, online sports gaming, all of which raise problems with stakeholder conflicts, legal problems, potentially with federal law. So I haven't heard concerns from any stakeholder about electronically drawing from a barrel, but I have heard a lot of concerns about language being misconstrued to permit other activities, which are probably better addressed in comprehensive legislation. And by the way, I should note Local 71, which I was unaware even participated in this, is one of my wife's employers. So I should just note that conflict of interest since they weighed in with this proposal, notwithstanding that I actually didn't support it. Thank you.
And one last follow-up, Madam Chair, and to Representative Fields. Do you believe this amendment will result in a significant expansion of gaming revenue beyond what is currently already realized? And is this a net plus for that industry?
It's not my intention with House Bill 128 to expand the scope of online gaming beyond online raffle sales. If an amendment was misconstrued to allow such a broad expansion of online gaming, whether that would lead to significant additional revenue, I think is hard to know, but I wouldn't want to go down that road with understanding all the implications of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Well, through the chair, just to make clear, and you've effectively answered this, but Representative Fields, this bill has nothing to do with any change to poll tab laws.
Through the chair, correct.
Follow up? You made reference to the definition of by lot. We received last weekend an email that mentioned other reforms. For example, there's apparently a requirement that a person who, I guess, is an operator or permittee, have a lease for bingo or pull tab locations, and that there are instances where that requirement is silly as they say. Do you is that the sort of reform, further reform you're looking to engage in, or are you saying, let's leave that for a different day?
Actually, through the chair, since this bill got introduced, I've heard a number of good ideas in the realm of charitable gaming, and my hope with this bill is that since we have some events that are pending that groups are trying to plan and execute in the midst of a pandemic that are contingent on online raffle sales, that we can get this done and address broader reforms and separate legislation given the necessary time that that'll take. I would hate for this bill not to pass this year and render a bunch of really important events that would take place over the next six months unable to be conducted, unable to raise money for charities because of the additional complexities that other issues might engender.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
And thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess just to add to what Representative Fields was stating, I mean, we're all aware that the Department of Revenue is actively working with a consultant, very close to deciding a consultant that would really take a deep dive into all gaming, and I think that it's appropriate when they've discussed stakeholders, we're talking about bingo and pull tab operators, and you know, whether or not we're allowing them to operate online is something that I think needs to be discussed after we see the report from a consultant. So I agree that when we're discussing raffles and events that these groups are working towards right now, to make sure that they have the tools in place to continue with that. And we're, I think, gonna have a lot of conversation about gaming in the next 12 months. So I look forward to that conversation, but I agree with Rep Fields that we need to keep the topic pretty tight before us.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm in support of this bill, don't get me wrong, and I support the concept of it, and I support these nonprofits that wanna sell tickets. So I don't think it's the circumstances are so dire right now. I think bars are open, restaurants are open, supermarkets are open. You know, people can be out in public. People can do a lot of the same activities that they formerly sold raffle tickets in. So I don't think we're on major lockdown. So I don't see that a big problem right now. I guess I want to go back to my question. I figured Ms. Glover would have the answer to, but she did not, and her charitable gaming person is off, and I kind of forgot it was sewage day. So I just, you know, and some people may just say, well, that's a small detail, just let's ram this thing through, we'll fix it in the mix. I again, House floor isn't really a place to fix stuff, and often people say, this should have been done in committee, we don't know anything about this bill. So I'd like to sort of make sure, and I'm sure you and your competent staff can do research to find out, or Ms. Glover's charitable game person will be back soon, that for if you're doing a raffle, and some raffles are $5 and you're really just helping out the cause, and usually you're helping out the cause, but every once in a while someone says, here's a raffle ticket, it's $100, like a $100 raffle ticket, yeah, but we're only selling 1,000 of them, we're only selling 500 or whatever it is, and the grand prize is a round trip to Hawaii with et cetera, et cetera. So you want to know that you're one of 1,000 or one of 500, but that concept even extends to the $5 raffle ticket. So that is a finite, each ticket is numbered and discrete, and then if you're doing it online, you can't later add more tickets because sales are taken off. And you know, I just want to, I would think that's in regulation or in statute, and if someone says yes, I'll feel very comfortable. If not, I get worried that you're gonna go online and blow the place up.
Representative Fields.
Madam Chair, actually, this is an issue that my staff had researched, so I might turn to him now. Representative Wohl.
Mr. Walsh.
For the record, Tristan Walsh, staff to Representative Fields. Representative Wohl, through the chair, permission to read. 15 AAC 160.670 is one of the regulations regarding the printing and record keeping of raffle tickets. One of the things we have heard from a lot of stakeholders is that when you're looking at the mixed barrel sort of operation that you'll see is they will continue to list things and follow the laws and regulations regarding the maximum number of tickets that is in the pot, that is in the raffle, and they will be using things like a software platform can help them track sales and deduct tickets as they go and make sure that, for example, if someone's at a Safeway swiping on an iPad, they can track the tickets sold at each location, and then that will let them ensure that there's that they have no fault when it comes to tracking the number of tickets sold. And then regarding the actual drawing of the ticket, there are software programs and services that let you draw a ticket electronically, so that is one option. And then you also have the option of keeping and printing or making a paper copy to draw in the drum. And then we also retain in the bill, with the amendment from the member from District 20, the instruction to for the department to develop regulations to implement and contemplate some of these issues that local organizations may encounter.
Follow up?
Follow up. Thank you. So you cited that statute. It says you can track the number of tickets. Does it say you set out the number of tickets at the beginning of the raffle? It's a finite, discrete number?
To the chair, Representative Wohl, I'd actually have to get back to you on that.
Okay. That's the elusive question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Is there further discussion? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So we're talking about something that sounds fairly benign, enabling nonprofits to raise, be more effective at raising money. So the question that I would have would be in regards to how the proceeds of that additional money is being used, specifically in as it relates to lobbying and political causes of some sort. So there's a lot of conversations about dark money and other things. I just want to be very clear that we're talking about non-political related fundraising that won't increase the amount of funds being used to lobby and influence political campaigns and that type of thing. So I'm curious if that's the effect that would happen with this.
Representative Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. Not to my knowledge, there are, I think, just under 1,000 permittees affected under the bill, so I'm not familiar with all of them. The ones I am familiar with are these derbies and classics and many of the sportsman groups that conduct rallies. Those are the stakeholders who we've engaged with, and of course we've also coordinated with other stakeholders who are currently not affected, basically to ensure that they're not affected. I'm not aware of anyone where this would somehow get around Alaska's campaign finance laws. And I'm not aware of political groups that use this. That said, I haven't memorized all 1,000. B, even if there were, nothing in this bill would somehow enable them to get around our dark money laws, which would remain in place.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Is there further discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just had a couple of questions. So one, would you envision this where you'd have mixed, you'd have some that were in person and some that were online?
Through the chair, yes, and that's what we've heard that permittees have been doing during the pandemic, and those combined sales are valuable for them.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to Representative Fields, I guess I feel like maybe I'm just old school, but it's this idea that somehow they're having a ticket and someone selling it does give a connection to a real person somewhere instead of some who knows what that's been created to have an online type of a derby or so on and so forth. I would hope that most of this would be to benefit people and organizations that we care about and appreciate. But it occurs to me that potentially we could have a percentage that should be sold in person. Might help give that connection to reality, I guess, in a sense. And then I have one other point, and I know it talks about how this is to be addressed, but as opposed to having like creating paper tickets from the online sales and putting them in a actual barrel and pulling them out. But random number generators are not all created the same, and there is lots of there's lots of dabbling in different types of security when it comes to random numbers and those types of things. So I know that you don't address that directly in your bill, but it will have to be addressed at some point to make it fair and equitable.
Representative Fields?
Thanks, through the chair. I think those are good things to address in regulation to make sure it is fair and that opportunities to win remain equitable as they are under statute for physical tickets. Getting to your first question, you know, just as one example, Kenai River Sportfish Alliance, I believe, sold over half their tickets, little over half their tickets in person and a little under half online during the pandemic. Overall, they raised more money, and that's what I've heard from other operators is that, you know, for my downtown duck race in Ship Creek, they're certainly going to continue to sell online in downtown establishments. Hopefully we have great tourist seasons in the future and tourists come into town and buy these tickets in local stores. I think that in-person connection is essential for any functional event. I mean, you think about something like the Ninan or the Bethel Ice Classic that we also heard about. I don't see those events ever not selling tickets in person, just given the size of the community and the nature of the local event. I think the benefit of the online sales are, you know, number one, maybe you have someone in downtown Anchorage who's traveling outside who wants to buy a raffle ticket, or in the case of some of these conservation groups, they do sell high-value raffle tickets to non-residents, and those high-value raffle tickets have ability to raise a lot of money for conservation in the state of Alaska, conservation or natural resources. And that, I think, is a win, even if we continue to see most tickets being bought in person and maybe even most tickets contained, most tickets in person and most tickets by Alaska residents.
Thank you, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. You just brought something up, people traveling. Whenever I go outside or travel outside with my wife, we often buy a lottery ticket just for the heck of it. And but I don't think I can go online and buy a state lottery ticket from here online. And I think that's because we don't have one in the state of Alaska. Is that correct? And do those states allow online sales, let's say Washington State or somewhere, do they allow online sales to other states besides the areas where they sell the tickets?
Thanks. This is a complicated legal issue, but basically lotteries are different from raffles, and that's why we've construed this narrowly, and we aren't trying to permit, you know, an online lottery conducted in the state of Alaska in which people from multiple states could participate. That would be a much more complicated thing to pursue, and it's far beyond the scope of this bill.
Follow up?
Thank you. Last comment. I did just buy an online lottery ticket in Alaska on the permanent fund page for the Click Bishop lottery, internet only, I believe. So they do have online internet lottery tickets in Alaska of a limited style, and it's not a limited ticket because they want to sell as many as possible. And the more tickets you buy, the bigger the pot. So I don't think your bill will cover any of those. No, I don't know. Anyhow, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I don't believe it does, but I turned my staff. I'm wrong on that.
Through the chair, for the record, Tristan Walsh, staff director of Fields. Representative Wohl, through the chair, I believe when it comes to the Alaska Education Lottery, that was established under a different title and statute, and so it is not necessarily governed by the changes made here. And I would also defer to legislative legal if they have any additional input to that.
Thank you.
Ms. Radford?
Through the chair, that is correct. That was established in a different title and statute, so that is not covered under this bill.
Follow up? Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, your new subsection, it's section 2, does refer to lottery on line 7. So what is meant by the use of the word there?
Thanks. So to clarify, well, I guess I'm just going to turn to Ms. Radford for definitions, but what I meant is the set of events with these 1,000 permittees that we traditionally think of as derbies, classics, charitable gaming raffles, as opposed to, you know, what you might think of as a lottery that you would encounter in the lower 48, some of which are multi-state. So in terms of the legal definition, I'll turn to Ledge Legal.
Ms. Radford?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Josephson. Raffle and lottery are defined as one and the same under Title 15, or sorry, Title 5, 0515-690, and it simply means the selling of rights to participate in the awarding of prizes in a game of chance conducted by the drawing of prizes by lot. So it is the same in definition as a raffle in Alaska.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Rasmussen.
I guess just a quick question if Ms. Bradford has the answer. The permanent fund lottery that we do is closed to non-residents from my understanding. It was my understanding that you can only donate a portion of your Alaska permanent fund dividend, and is that accurate?
Ms. Radford?
Through the chair, yes, that's my understanding of that raffle. It is only through the permanent fund.
Follow up?
So just to follow up then, somebody couldn't go online and pay $100 to purchase a spot in the lottery. You have to be an Alaskan resident, and you have to be using a portion of your permanent fund dividend as, you know, your purchase in, if you will.
Ms. Radford?
Through the chair, that is correct. You do need to be in-state and using your permanent fund to buy one of those tickets.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh?
Just to clarify for the purposes of, through the chair, for the purposes of Representative Josephson and Representative Wool's concerns, the amendment from the member from District 22 added language that is protective for the state's interests as well as those operating a raffle or lottery under 515-690. It says the charitable gaming activity will take place in the state and the winner will be determined in the state. And the guidance we have gotten from legal experts on behalf of stakeholders said that this will allow this sort of activity, raffles to and lotteries, to be conducted here with as much safety as we can regarding interpretation.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Further discussion? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's something in the back of my head here that's sticking with me about unintended consequences, and I just want to have a second bite at the apple on this same topic. I'm looking at this support within the packet here. Both the Safari Club and the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, organizations that do good things within the state, and I'm a fan of hunting and fishing, right? Unintended consequences are that we just amended this bill to allow raffles to be purchased from out of state. The Safari Club's organization's mission specifically is advocacy. And on their website, it specifically says that they're going to advocate for specific legislation. We have campaign finance laws, and those aren't going to change here. What I'm recognizing is an unintended consequence of advocacy for local and state laws through money being donated or raffles being purchased from people outside the state that would then impact the conversation that is happening through advocacy within the state. Whereas if we hadn't have passed the amendment, the dollars raised through those raffles would be by Alaskans for Alaskans. And we are potentially having an unintended consequence here of larger amounts of money flowing in from out of state to these local organizations dealing with local issues. And I think that warrants further consideration of this committee and the legislature. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thanks through the chair, Representative Carpenter. Prior to the pandemic, these organizations did sell raffle tickets to members of other states, you know, your person who saved up to do a big Kodiak bear hunt or something like that. So the pandemic hit, the administration put out this temporary guidance on online sales. And as you know, when I heard from business and nonprofit stakeholders that wanted to continue those online sales, we drafted the bill just to line up very closely with the administration's temporary guidance. When we did that, then we heard from some other groups like sporting groups that said, hey, previous to the pandemic, we did sell raffle tickets outside. So that was sort of the origin of the amendment from Representative Rasmussen, was to continue a pre-existing ability to sell raffle tickets outside, in this case, online. So that was actually just protecting a power that they already had, not creating a new power. Thank you.
Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess just circling this question, this problem, the phrase may draw winning tickets online, which is currently in the written bill, does that allow for a random number generator for use in drawing the, quote, winning ticket?
Representative Fields.
In terms of that level of detail, I'm definitely going to refer to legislative legal for drawing a lot online versus from a barrel physically.
Ms. Radford?
Thank you. Through the chair, this language in that sentence is ambiguous. It's unclear how the department would determine, look at that, but it is possible that they would interpret that fairly broadly to allow for something like a random number generator.
Representative LeBon.
As follow-up, I guess an earlier question about if somebody buys a raffle ticket online, do you take that mechanical step of writing a ghost ticket to put into the barrel, so that online ticket purchase is now a physical representation, and the drawing would be pulling a ticket from a barrel?
Representative Fields.
Through the chair, I think if you are doing a physical drawing from a barrel, you have to, because the statute is predicated on this equal chances of winning concept.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and I guess in reference to Representative Carpenter's discussion, I think that we may be overstating impacts. I don't know that there would be a coordinated effort for people who strongly oppose Safari Club's intent or their mission statement to come purchase a $20 or $50 or $100 raffle ticket with the intention of trying to sway or move that group and the issues that they advocate for. I think it's more likely that people outside of the state would support what their mission is, and as a result, may purchase a raffle ticket to support that cause. And if you think about us as elected officials, we take donations during campaigns, but no donation from any group or individual determines how we act as elected officials, because we have people that donate to us because of what we stand for, just like people purchasing raffle tickets online or in person are doing so in support of the mission of the group that they're supporting. So I don't think that by allowing online purchases rather than just in person, or people that are out of state, I have family members who love fishing in Alaska. They don't live in Alaska, but they would be happy to support the cause of supporting those efforts online.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, and it's a fair point. I appreciate it, Madam Co-Chair. I'm not speaking positively or negatively in regards to the two organizations that are sitting in front of me. I'm simply stating that if we're talking about local influence for local issues that are generally funds raised locally, with maybe the exception of a hard copy raffle that's done in a nationwide organization at a meeting that happens outside of the state, and those funds support this just enables that outside influence to occur easier because it's occurring over the internet. And I'm not speaking specifically in regards to this particular organization. There may be an organization out there that I don't support philosophically, and I'm going to support them just as much with this change as I would the organization that I do support, right? They would have to be treated equally. And thus, the effect we would have on local politics, in this case, would be more money pouring into those organizations that have established themselves to influence the politics, because it's easier to have those raffles and receive that money from out of state, not speaking specifically to any particular issue or organization, all of them would be treated equally, and we would see potentially an increase of funds coming from out of state for our local issues, and that's what I think is should be concerning.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think there's some interesting points being brought up here, especially with regards to out of state, which again makes me feel the importance of establishing ticket limit and finite ticket numbers, because if it's infinite, you could, and what if you had a $1,000 lottery ticket and suddenly you sold 100 of them, and you might want to know where that all came from. So, and I think by establishing these parameters and limits and numbers from the outset of any lottery, then you know there's no funny business going on. And again, that's, and I don't know how the bill sponsor feels about this, but you know, I know it's not in your bill. It may or may not be in regulation. We're waiting here, but I think that's an important component to any of these games of chance, that there's, especially in something where you're selling this kind of lottery, that ticket numbers and quantities be established at the outset.
Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Yes, every raffle I've ever seen or participate in does have that advertised at the outset, and that's part of the appeal of buying, is that unlike, say, a lottery in lower 48, you know, lottery in lower 48, they want as many people to participate as possible, you know, at some point does materially reduce your odds of winning, whereas a raffle, of course, the permittee wants to sell all the raffle tickets, but there's a finite number, and I think that's part of the appeal, and I'm certainly going to do the research, but if that's not currently addressed, I'm very open to addressing it, you know, assuming that there is concurrence of all the stakeholders, because it just seems like what they do already.
Follow up. Just to be clear, certain things like the Nanana Ice Classic, you don't want to put a limit. You want to sell every possible ticket you can so that you can generate a big pot, so whoever wins more money. But I know that's already addressed in statute. Thank you.
I received a note that Ms. Glover can comment on Representative Wohl's question. Ms. Glover?
Good afternoon. For the record, Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director. Back to your question, Rep. Wohl, related to the number of raffle tickets. The reason why I wasn't able to find it in regulation is it does not exist in regulation. There is nothing that limits the number or that you have to, you know, give the purchasers the numbers you're selling. And so you could market it as being for 100 tickets and then sell more. I don't know that really happens, but that is, it is allowable because it's not regulated currently to that. What's in regulation right now is, you know, you have to have numbered sequential tickets and account for every ticket, whether it's sold or not sold.
Thank you, Ms. Glover. Representative Wohl?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you, Ms. Glover. I think that's an important point, and the fact that they have to be numbered and sequential is great, but I think, and maybe if you're selling tickets only in your home community, you don't have this issue, but if you're going global, I think this is something that should be addressed, and I personally don't feel comfortable with the bill until that issue is addressed, and I'll just put that on the record.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Mr. Co-Chair, is there a motion?
Nope.
Representative Johnson.
I did just have a couple more questions, just I would like to get an answer about. Is other states do this? And then, so I'll go ahead and take the answer on, maybe it's in there, but.
Through the chair, short answer, yes, multiple other states do have language very much like what you have before you with the amendment from Representative Rasmussen, which basically outlined how you can have an in-state organization doing a raffle in-state that does have participation from residents of other states. So we reviewed some of those examples and tried to make it consistent with what seemed like best practices.
Follow up?
Thank you. And so if we were going to have someone that, say, was a national company and they or national nonprofit, and they wanted to come to Alaska and establish a raffle, but you'll use us as a home base, but just use us for their internet, you know, locations, because they can sell them nationwide out of Alaska, not from another state per se. Would they then have to be registered in Alaska then? Would they have to have a business license or be registered as a nonprofit in Alaska?
Thanks to the chair. I guess first I would turn to AS05.15, which has some limitations on who's a qualified organization, must exist for at least 3 consecutive years before applying and have at least 25 members who are Alaska residents. So there are some safeguards in here against national organizations basically using us as a haven to conduct raffles, and I've turned to my staff for additional details on those kind of safeguards.
Mr. Walsh.
For the record, Tristan Walsh, staff representative Fields. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, in our background research, we also found that there are approximately 40 to 45 other states that allow online raffles in some way, shape, or form. Most of them are restricted to charitable gaming for nonprofits, but in regards to a national organization looking to find a home to be based out of, there are a majority of other states have some form of this practice.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam excuse me. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I gathered from your question a moment ago about having a motion that there's this bill's on a fast track to get out of here, and I was just wondering, since it's established there is no ticket finiteness or requirement, you could say I'm selling 100 tickets and you can sell 10,000. I would like to either amend this. I don't want to bring it to the House floor because my experience tells me that it's very unpredictable down there. So I don't know if the bill sponsor would be okay with that, even right now, as a conceptual amendment or what. But you know, I'm not trying to slow your bill down. I just that's something I feel, especially because we're going global. You could buy a ticket in Jaipur, India.
Right. Thank you. Let's take a brief at ease. Finance back on the record. Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Mr. Co-Chair, is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 128, version 32-LS0649/A, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Will the secretary please call the roll?
Yes.
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 No.
Yes.
Yes.
And with a vote of 9 yeas and 1 nay, House Bill 128 has been moved from committee as amended. We will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. House Finance back on the record. Next is House Bill 27, naming the Irene Weber Bridge. The committee last heard this bill on Friday, and amendments were due to my office on Sunday. No amendments were submitted for this bill. The bill itself is before the committee. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Mr. Co-Chair, is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 27, version 32-LS0228. /A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 27 has moved from committee. This concludes our business for today. Our next meeting is Tuesday, March 30th. We will be holding a first hearing on House Bill 93, GO Bonds, State Infrastructure Projects, sponsored by the administration. And I ask members to stay for a few moments to after adjournment to sign the paperwork. With that, at 3:17, we are adjourned.